Good morning, folks. You're listening to Right Side Up with your host, Bill Huff and Mike Tagliavia, where we're talking local politics with an emphasis on what's happening in your neighborhood. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Bill.
How are we doing today?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
All right. Easter weekend. How was your weekend?
Pretty nice.
Quiet?
You know, yeah.
You tend to be pretty quiet. No big parties, no celebrations. Just
no.
You and the wife kicking back, enjoying nature.
Yeah.
Walking the dog. Feeding the chickens.
Visiting with some friends. Yeah. Make sure the chickens are okay. Making sure the horses are all right.
Horses, yeah. I don't know about the horses, but yeah, whatever, I guess. It's just not my cup of tea.
Yeah.
For me, it's just family. You know, wife and all the kids, grandkids. I love to cook, of course, and so we get everybody together and, have a nice meal, relax. Just spend some quality family time together. Yeah. Hopefully listeners were able to do the same thing.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, well, it's, if it's not about family, what is it about, right?
It needs to be.
Yeah. So. Yeah, so, last week we were talking about meeting some of our listeners. And again, every time I go out now, somebody will mention the show, which is awesome.
It's
great. And
Gerald
and Stacy down there in Wethersfield are apparently listeners. They tune
good.
In every once in a while, which is awesome. What's in the news here this week?
I was briefly reading a letter that I pulled off of the Washington Town website.
Oh, really? What's happening in Washington Town?
Well, it was a letter to the people of Washington, I guess, from our rep in Orange One, and he was talking about a number of the bills that made crossover. And he referenced something like 881 bills that were in play this session.
Really?
881. This state is tiny. We don't need 880. We don't need 81 bills.
So he didn't talk at all about his European vacation and his carbon footprint over the last week?
No, they won't do that. Why would they do that? They don't live their virtue signaling out loud.
There you go. 881 bills.
Yeah. That
unbelievable.
Yeah, it's mind-numbing. Why do we need that many?
Cut the session in half.
Bring it back like we talked last week. Bring it to exactly like New Hampshire does, $100 a session plus per diem.
Yep.
That's it.
There you go.
That's it. If you don't like it, don't serve.
Be in favor of that.
Yeah.
Hey, we talk about Rob Roper, of course, his Substack, Behind the Lines. He's just a wealth of information. This is just hot off the press. This was takes the cake. And we've been talking about all the taxes coming out of Montpelier, part of these 880 some odd bills that they're passing. Last week there was, I think it might have been House Appropriations, passed another $130 million in new taxes out of their committee.
Another 100. Do they have a money tree that we don't know about?
Doesn't even include the $240 million deficit in the school ed fund. I don't know where these people think money's coming from.
Maybe it
is the money tree.
I wish they'd share some of it.
But the article's really good, and I hate to read stuff, but I will hear quickly from Behind the Lines, Rob Roper. Literally, and I quote, on the floor of the House following a vote to make Vermont the state with the highest corporate taxes in the nation, progressive Democrat Brian Sinha of Burlington took to the microphone and told Vermonters, read my lips. Yes, new taxes. Sin is what we call it. An attitude, promise, threat is characteristic of the Dem/progressive supermajority under the Golden Dome. He, they mean it. They really don't care. Proud, I guess, of
I hope there is a serious rebuke of this insanity.
Well, it's going to
November.
It's going to have to be. And Mike, I think people are getting tired of it. The article goes on here, and it's not just the corporate taxes that they're jacking up. It's 20% property tax increase they just slammed us with, a new $100 million payroll tax that kicks in July, the 20% hike in DMV fees that started in January, the 70-cent per gallon home heating carbon tax that's coming in 2025, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. They're also looking at a sales tax increase or an expansion, a tax on the internet, internet software, a sweetened beverage tax, a clean transportation carbon tax on gas and diesel to go along with a clean heat carbon tax, the renewable energy standard bill that just passed the House will add as much as $1 billion to our electric bills over the next decade, an income tax surcharge that would give Vermont one of the highest marginal income tax rates in the country, and kicking in at one of the lowest income thresholds. There's just no end to this.
I'm going to put a question out to our listeners. Okay, Bill, and you and I have talked about this off air, but I'm going to put it out there for our listeners. Maybe they'll give us a little bit of feedback. Do you, the conservative slash Republican slash anybody with 85% oxygen content, period, excuse me, do you think it's time that we have some sort of a popular strike, a march on Montpelier? This is insanity gone wild. Where is the money going to come from? Apparently, there was a woman who's a business owner from Williamstown who went and testified up at one of the in Montpelier.
At the governor's press conference. Oh, it wasn't a testimony. It was the weekly press conference.
And it was, what was it? The taxes are suffocating us.
Exactly.
They're driving people. I was talking to a young couple last night.
Putting around
and they're
business.
Thinking about, well, we might have to move. No, don't move. Stay and fight. Fire these people. Tell them how horrible they're doing their job.
Well, there is a solution, and it's to clean house.
Yes.
At Montpelier.
The solution
is
not.
I keep saying they got drunk on COVID money, and the high just doesn't want to stop.
Well, yeah, and like you said, they start these programs, they don't fully fund them, they get people hooked on them, and then they say, well, we have people's constituents saying, you know, this program is about to run out, they're afraid. Well, like you spoke about, the housing, homeless housing issue that the governor put, 500 people out of the housing?
Yes. Yep.
And they magically went back to where they came from because the free stuff dried up.
Yeah, a dozen people wound up utilizing those emergency weekend shelters out of the 500. Yeah, there was a Republican, Scott Beck, from St. Johnsbury, and apparently he's on the House Ways and Means Committee, and he's quoted as saying, in the last 10 years, personal income tax receipts in the state of Vermont have grown 54%, sales tax receipts have increased 65%, property taxes have increased by 53%, corporate income tax has nearly tripled in the last 10 years, and yet we're being told we don't have enough money. We got to raise more taxes.
Because the supermajority's got an addiction issue, okay? And the addiction is they're addicted to our money.
Yeah,
our money. It's
still,
our
still
money.
Still drunk on COVID money. They don't want to get off that high.
No.
Unbelievable. Yeah, so to add to what Representative Beck was saying, H-883. The House just approved their version of the budget, $8.8 billion. But guess what? It didn't even include $26 million that they know they're going to spend. So they're not even being transparent about, you got Senate, you know, bragging or what, or threatening or whatever.
Well,
I guess we're going to do the tax.
He's trying to outdo the nonsense, the insanity that public servant Philly Baruth was talking about. So, you know, they're trying desperately to outdo each other with the insanity. It's mind-boggling.
Well, it is. You know, it just doesn't seem to quit. And to wrap up Roper's article here, of course, he reminds everybody that we're all paying more because of inflation as well. So, we're paying 20% more for food on top of.
And that was not even taken into consideration by these people in the supermajority. They're like, the hell with this. So what?
Well, you would think they'd have a little bit of compassion for the constituents.
Apparently not.
They're having trouble making ends meet because of inflation. you know, food up over 20%, and
some items are up close to 40%.
Yeah, that's
it's insane. If I, Bill, if I might,
sure,
I want to read from. This is a letter, like I said, this was from Carl Demereau. This is on the Washington, Vermont website. And a quote from his is, the House Committee on Appropriations worked late into the night on Thursday to put their finishing touches to the budget. Well, apparently they didn't finish it completely because they came up $26 million shy.
Yeah.
My view, nope, you don't get it. Sorry.
Yeah, the budget that they approved and sent to the Senate was minus $26 million that they know that they're going to spend. They're not even being transparent about
it. No, they're not.
8.8. And, of course, remind everybody, you know, the state's budget was $6 billion pre-COVID. So 4 years ago, in 4 years, we've gone from $6 billion now to almost $9 billion, 50% increase.
It's insane. Look, they saved us. They helped us so much. We have S18. Apparently, a bill prohibiting the sales of flavored e-liquids and tobacco. So we can smoke or inject just about any drug we want now, according to one of the bills that's being pushed out of the supermajority. But you can't have a flavored tobacco.
No. And
or a flavored e-liquid.
And you know what the odd thing is there, Mike, with that particular bill, by passing this ban, if it goes all the way through and is passed into law, they're going to lose, I think it's in the neighborhood of $18 million of revenue that they're going to have to make up for somewhere. They're going to have to tax something else to make up for the fact that they're not going to allow you to have, you know, a flavored smoke,
yeah,
or vape.
Their addiction is to our money, and it needs to be broken. It needs to be broken, period.
Yeah, for certain. And so, you know, legislatively, crossover is done. So that means all these bills, like you mentioned, that Demereau was talking about, 881 of them. Now they're, whatever passed in the Senate is in the House, whatever passed in the House is in the Senate. And so things will probably quiet down here for a little bit as some of these things are digested and talked about.
Yeah.
But then, of course, the closer we get to the end of the session, things are going to get fired up again for sure. One of the bills I'll mention just quickly that we've talked about in the past was S-258. It was amended substantially, passed out of both the committee and then the full Senate. And is now in the House Environment and Energy Committee. Yeah, and so we probably won't hear much about it, you know, for a week or two. But of course, once that gets taken up, we'll have a lot more information for listeners at that point. There'll be more coming on S-258, but it's a bill we've talked about a lot, so we just wanted to bring you up to date.
I don't know when the session is due to end, but there's going to be, like Steve McDonald said when we had him on the show, the target-rich environment. So plenty to talk about. Hopefully there'll be some good news. Hopefully at some point they will get off of their addiction and start to realize that there are not a lot of people who are taxpayers, workers, voters in this state who are content with what they're doing.
Well, it'll be interesting to see, you know, I think a lot of these bills probably will make it through because of the supermajority, but then we'll see, you know, what gets vetoed, and if we wind up with another veto session where the legislature's called back to try to override.
Well, my hope is that the governor buys a case of veto pens because he's going to need it.
Yeah, I think so. The way things are going, I would anticipate probably a number of vetoes coming this session. Lots more to talk about on Right Side Up. We're going to be right back. Don't go away.
That's why I just can't get you.
Well, welcome back, everybody. Mike and I have been talking about taxes primarily here, all the spending that's being proposed and passed out of Montpelier again.
Yeah.
So, Mike, you were referencing your rep's letter.
Yeah, this happens to be in my district, Orange 1, and this is a letter that was posted on the Washington, Vermont website. And it's a letter from Carl Demereau about some of the activity in the House. And another quote from the letter is, "One of next week's bills will include a new tax bracket for those who make over $500,000 a year. Currently, the highest tax bracket is 8.75% for those making just under $300,000 and up. The bill under consideration next week will create a new bracket of 11.75% of those making $500,000 and up. I'm curious to hear what you think about increasing the rate on those with much higher incomes." First of all, after seeing all of the, my two cents is, first of all, after seeing all of the rate of inflation and everything that's been happening in this state and in this country in the past 3 years, $500,000 isn't what it was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Number one. Number two, the people who are making, quote unquote, making $500,000 are probably, a lot of them, small business owners, people who employ others and maybe offer them benefits. So what this tax is going to do is take money out of their, the option of that much money, 3% of whatever, that they could reinvest in their business or their employees. So I think it's a horrible, horrible idea.
Well, first off, it's a 33% increase from 8 3/4 to 11 3/4 is a increase by a third. Well, that's a whopper to start with.
Like you said before, they're just so hell bent on taxing to fix all of these so-called problems that they see.
Well, the left does this all the time, and you know they think it's an easy sell. Oh, we're gonna tax the rich. You know, everybody will get on board with that. Nobody has an issue with that. But like you mentioned, you know, $300,000 isn't what it used to be. That's not rich by any stretch of the imagination. But you and I talked about this a week or two ago. The people that, there's a couple of categories first that make people that make over $500,000. So number one, consider that elderly couple that sold their one lifetime home.
Right, that they've had probably 30, 40 years.
And actually, you know, got a profit from it that they want to use that money now to retire on, move into a smaller house, right, or support them in a nursing home or whatever. You know what? There's no exemption for those people. No. You're going to whack them with a 33% increase, you know, when
they're on fixed income as it is.
And you're going to their whole life.
Yeah.
You know, so some of those people in that tax bracket are they're only there once.
This sounds like mob tactics.
Only there once,
right?
And they're going to get anyway.
Yeah, and the state wants its peace when the sale is done.
But like I started to say before, you know, we've talked about this a week or two ago. The people that are consistently in those brackets do not work for wages. They don't get a W-2 at the end of the year. Their income is derived from rents, royalties, capital gains, stock options. And they have deductions, legal deductions that are available to them, for instance, depreciation. There's a lot of different ways for those people to shift income, to move income legally and ethically from one year to another, to postpone income. And if you jack up the rates on those people,
they're just gonna find ways to like you say, shift the income.
Absolutely.
Postpone the income.
Sure. And then who's stuck with the bill?
The rest of us.
The middle class. We're gonna be left holding the bag again.
The legislature's gonna come back and say, "Oh, there was a shortfall, we need to come for you."
Well, don't be fooled by this tax the rich thing. Because they don't work for wages. They don't get a W-2. There are plenty of ways that they can legally shift income, hide that income.
This is the left's way.
You and I are going to pay. Our listeners are going to pay.
It's the ideology of envy of you know, the rich are somehow the bad guy. So well, first I, of all, I, what well, is rich?
Yeah. Well, I forget this proposal was going to raise so many millions of dollars. And what I'm trying to tell folks is those, you know, say it's 50 million or whatever the number was, it's not going to come out of the pockets of those making over $300,000 or $500,000. It's the once the tax is set and the legislature, you know, wants to spend it or has it dedicated to a program, they're going to get the money from somewhere and it's going to come from you and I.
Yep. You know, they're going to try to get their money no matter what. And they don't. They really don't care.
Once it's spent,
right?
That, you know, it's dedicated to some program somewhere. Yeah.
Weren't you talking about another bill that they have? Something about the disposal of EV batteries?
Yeah, this is
the law of unintended consequences comes back to bite us again.
That's S-254. Gee, now that there's they've been promoting EVs and they're all over the place, and some of them are beginning to die.
Yeah, the ones that haven't burned up.
I guess it finally dawned on somebody that, hey, maybe we ought to figure out what we're going to do with the dead batteries.
Yeah.
So, S-254 states that on or before July 1, 2026, the Secretary of Natural Resources shall complete an assessment of the opportunities, challenges, and feasibility of establishing mandatory end-of-life management programs for the following battery types. 1, batteries used in hybrid and electric vehicles. 2, battery energy storage systems. And 3, batteries that are not easily removable from the products they power. So, yeah, all of a sudden now.
Shouldn't that have been assessed before all of this stuff was pushed upon us?
Well, the thing is, and you and I talk about this, there is a cost, a risk yep. associated with these batteries.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, yeah, before you promote them and give people incentives to go buy more of these things or mandate that we have to go buy more of these things,
right.
like the Global Warming Solutions Act will do, yeah, wouldn't it be a good idea to figure out, you know, what you're going to do with them?
That would have made sense to me.
Well,
apparently, I think there are now a couple of companies springing up that can actually reclaim the minerals or the elements, the key elements that are in these batteries that would be considered pollutants if they just were thrown in a landfill somewhere. But there aren't enough of them yet.
No, to make it economically feasible to do that.
Not at all.
No.
Totally, completely not economical.
Well, that just means they need a subsidy. Somebody's going to pay because we're going to force it. We're going to mandate. Listen to the verbiage. We're going to mandate, something else, all with an associated cost. And who's going to pay for that mandate?
Me and you.
You and I are going to pay for that mandate. Yeah, there was the article that I had here quoted. Hotcars.com. EV battery disposal is a pressing concern as recycling processes for lithium-ion batteries are still developing, leading to improper disposal that releases toxic chemicals and contributes to pollution and climate change. Yeah, that probably high time we figured out what we're going to do with these things.
Yeah, it probably would be a good idea.
Yep.
It just every time we come to these subjects, I'm just reminded of the Declaration of Independence. And the overreach and what's prescribed in the Declaration of Independence. It's time. It's long past time.
Well, you mentioned it's probably time that collectively people revolt in some fashion. You got to speak up.
Civil disobedience.
You got to speak up. You've got to make yourself heard.
Just a mass. Look at. Not to get off of Vermont, but it's going to affect us sooner or later here, farmers in this country. Farmers in Europe, all over Europe, have had enough with government regulation, and they are coming out en masse and protesting. It needs to start happening here.
So Europe protests or goes on strike a little differently than we do here.
Yeah, they do.
Country.
Okay. but still, going up there to Montpelier to the tune of 50,000 people, they can't ignore that. And neither can any of these so-called news agencies. Right? They can't ignore that.
Yeah, if this
state... They could try to put their spin on it, but they can't ignore it.
If this state did anything like a typical... European style strike or revolt. It'd be news, all right.
Yeah.
Well, even Canada, back during COVID, the truckers got together.
Yeah.
And blockaded part of the downtown city. And I think what you're referring to are farmers in France, wasn't it?
Oh, they're all over there in France.
Germany.
Now that I need to remember all the countries, I think even farmers in the Netherlands, all over because of fertilizer restrictions and threats to take their land.
So what did they do? How did they revolt?
They had parades of tractors completely blocking highways and congesting highways. They would go into cities and just completely snarl up the cities with parades of, I mean, I'm not talking about little lawn tractors. I'm talking about massive farm tractors. And, you know, they would get attention because they would completely shut down a city.
See, now I was thinking, too, that some of those protests would bring along the manure spreader.
Some of them on the way in.
And
they went back empty. I'll tell you that. They went back empty.
That's what I tell you. When they strike in Europe, it's a little different.
Well, you're talking about what they're doing to these
peaceful
people.
It's peaceful. I mean, they're, you know.
Right.
But they're making their point.
Yes, but in the process of these governments enacting these regulations, they're bankrupting farmers, and there are things that are, you know, regulations that are enacted that they're talking about actually taking people's land, farmers' land. No.
Well, where's the food going to come from? Well, that's right. We're going to grow it in a petri dish.
Yeah, we're going to grow it.
Forgot about that.
And you can't
biological chicken.
And you can't discount the fact that there are a lot of people out there pushing this. Oh, we're overpopulated as a world, which is nonsense. It's total nonsense.
Yeah. So, some people might remember that I was a pilot back in my former life here before I retired. And I'll never forget, you know, flying into France, the airport workers would go on strike pretty frequently, it seemed like. You know, it seemed like every couple of months somebody, baggage handlers or ground crews or somebody was on strike. And the way that they would handle that is they'd just go have a picnic on the runway.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. You know, grab your baggage cart and your lunch and just go park it in the middle of the runway, and you'd shut the whole place down. I think it was normally advertised. Hey, at 1:30 this afternoon, you know, just everybody beware. We're having a picnic on 27 left.
Wow.
Yeah, but it was a peaceful way to get their point across, and like I said, they make their point. But yeah, really differently than we do things here.
Yeah, in most cases, that's true. That's true. But, you know, people can only take so much. When they're going in reverse, they're having trouble with their mortgage, having trouble making car payments, having trouble buying groceries, maybe buying prescriptions. They're watching their savings dissolve. For me, it was a while ago. I've had enough of this nonsense. When are people en masse going to finally say enough is enough?
You know, I hope it's this year, Mike. I hope that, you know, we have record turnout at the polls.
Me too.
And people understand that it's the legislature that's doing this to all of us. You know, they're the ones that created these and passing the 880 some odd new bills.
Yeah. Well,
a lot of them spending bills.
The 881 in play, I don't know that's how many actually made crossover, but that's still insane.
Yeah, well, we started out with 1,200 and 880 made crossover, so they're still considering almost 900 new bills for this year.
Like I said, the government's going to need a case of veto pens.
Grab your tractor and head for Montpelier. have a picnic there on Main Street.
There you go.
More Right Side up to come. We'll be right back.
But you rescued me from reaching for the bottom. And
You're listening to Right Side Up. My name is Mike Taglavia. My co-host is Bill Huff. We've been talking about the taxes, the legislature, the supermajority that is totally addicted to our tax dollars, and how they just cannot get enough of our hard-earned money to spend on their pet projects.
Taxes just keep coming this year, and it's going to continue until do something about it.
Yeah, they need to be put out on the street. They need to be told, no, we're not going to take it anymore. Go home.
It's an election year.
Yeah,
you got to remember.
November's
coming right up. It's time to get real about trying to live here in Vermont.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Get real. Get a reality check.
Well, that's what we need, desperately need. But you had something out of the AG's office that you wanted to mention, right?
This is Vermont Daily Chronicle, dated March 28th. Vermont's Charity Clark among 12 AGs warning gun maker Glock.
And, so we're going after the Second Amendment again?
Yeah, and any gun manufacturers to trying to drag them, like we've talked about before on the show with some of the lawsuits that are going on in Vermont already relating to the Second Amendment.
So did Glock do something to harm Vermonters?
Charity Clark, our attorney general, has signed on with 11 other states because of an Illinois lawsuit. And this is by Joe Mueller for Center Square. An Illinois lawsuit has led Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser and attorneys general from 11 other states, including Vermont AG Charity Clark, to notify gunmaker Glock to preserve 37 years of documentation regarding its handguns. 37 years. So it's insane. But earlier this month, the city of Chicago filed a lawsuit against Glock, alleging the company failed to change the design of a pistol. Chicago claims Glock knew a do-it-yourself switch could make the handguns a machine gun and resulted in proliferation of illegal machine guns.
Okay, 37 years of record. So this ability to change something is it that old? 37? And now we're just hearing about this now? I've never heard anything about it.
And here again, how do we bankrupt gun makers, make them go out of business, suffocate them with lawsuits?
How do we keep Donald Trump from becoming president? We keep him in court and use all of his money, tie up all of his money so he can campaign.
Yeah, but his fine.
See, there seems to be a theme, a reoccurring theme here, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
We can't have a debate about issues. We got to use tactics to try to destroy our enemies.
Use the Department of Justice to bankrupt
all in
people.
The name of democracy, Mike. Yeah. We're preserving democracy.
Yeah. So Illinois has passed a law last year allowing lawsuits against the firearms industry, which is being challenged in federal and state level courts. But they're all piling on while the challenge is still on.
They do this all. I don't care what it is. All these attorney general, somebody comes up with this crackpot idea, and everyone's going to pile on, and they know it.
It's blatantly unconstitutional, but they're going to still tie up Glock and whatever team of attorneys they're going to need to put on this case to deal with defending themselves in this.
Well, and if enough AGs get together and start suing these big corporations, what's going to happen? They're going to settle, and they're going to get money. It's like extortion.
It is.
It's extortion.
That's exactly what it is. The good news is we have, I believe, 29 states that are constitutional carry states now, and that number has been growing in the past few years. Thankfully, Vermont is one of those states.
For now. We'll see.
But it's important for our listeners to remember, they're never going to get rid of the Second Amendment. To amend the Constitution of the United States, I think you need it's more like three quarters to actually pass the amendment. It's 34 or 36 states, and that'll never happen.
Yeah.
That'll never happen. Look at how many Republican legislatures there are, so that will not happen. So what do? They do these lawsuits. They do these end runs with magazine bans and everything else that are also blatantly unconstitutional. But they keep trying this. Part of it is, we're going to segue into another piece, education. If we had people, our kids, who are more educated, have more civics education, they would know more of this, and they'd be able to have, even our kids would be able to have a more coherent conversation about this kind of stuff. Right?
Yeah. A couple of days ago, I was on Sound Off with Linda Kirker.
Right.
It's a Northwest Access local TV program out of St. Albans. And we talked about education quite a bit. And that, you know, apparently she was a big proponent of teaching history. I always was horrible at history.
I never liked it. But, you know, now looking back and seeing what's going on in our world, now I know why they tried to.
History is absolutely important, but the alternative
you don't learn
for
from
me
it.
When I was in high school was civics, so I took civics,
okay,
which I think serves me well these days. But
yeah, I didn't. I should have, especially now that here we are on the video. I never could have imagined. But
oh no. So is there more to this Glock case?
Well, there's plenty more. What let's see. Through the practices that they're alleging Glock did, Glock knowingly creates, maintains, and contributes to a condition in Chicago that endangers the safety and health of the public.
And somehow that relates to Vermont?
Well,
what's happening on the streets of Chicago?
Well, the only thing that relates to Vermont in that respect is we don't have an attorney general who is trying to get rid of the backlog of cases that we already have. Back when I was running against Attorney General Charity Clark, I did a forum down in Manchester and spoke to a woman who was a victim of crime. And because of COVID and now even afterward, because of the backlog, it's basically 8 months now, but 8 months ago when I talked to this woman who was a victim, we corresponded numerous times even after the election, her attacker was still not being dragged into court, was out still committing more crimes. So why is our attorney general not dealing with the backlog and stop wasting time with these kind of frivolous lawsuits?
You know, a couple of shows ago, we kind of introduced the Republican campaign this year, Get Real.
Yeah.
And at its core, Mike, regardless of the subject, law and order, what we're talking about, or the environment, you know, the core of Get Real actually, you know, relates to exactly what you just said. Getting back to helping Vermonters, not trying to save the world, not trying to, you know, jump on a lawsuit with Chicago, but doing what matters to the people that live here and pay the taxes here.
Yeah, she's an employee. Our attorney general is an employee of Vermonters, not of Chicago or any other state. So why waste the time or the money or the resources?
Dollars. Yeah, the money that it takes to run those lawsuits for years is our tax dollars.
And whatever other resources other than money that she's delegated to it.
Yeah.
So.
Hey, one of the big bills they're talking about here in Montpelier, H-687, it's a House bill, of course, and you know, housing is a big issue. That's another core tenet in the Republican Get Real campaign is to try to fix housing. It was one of Governor Scott's top three priorities for the state. And this is the fix, if you can believe it. They're going to double down on Act 250. Act 250 is 50 years old. It needs to be reformed. It's a huge impediment to affordable housing in the state.
It's probably the main impediment.
Well, and the Get Real tenant in the Republican campaign is regulatory reform. That's what R stands for, regulatory reform. And Act 250 is just part of that regulatory reform because there are other mandates and other laws. They just passed a law about contractors. Everyone's going to, you know, register as a contractor these days. They're going to save us from ourselves or from.
I just talked to somebody about just that and the frustration that this person who's been in business for years and now has to deal with this department.
Yeah.
And they're not. Why do they even exist?
Because they're assumed to be a criminal until you can prove otherwise. That's what got me out of the investment business.
Right.
Was Obama's. I forget now what it was called. It was a consumer protection. Well, I had to prove my innocence every day. I had, you know, everybody was assumed to be a crook that dealt with the public, and you had to try to prove it that you weren't a crook every single day. But anyway, let's get back to H-687. So this is the left's attempt to reform Act 250. So there's a couple of tenets that I wanted to point out. The first one is changes in governance and appeals. The bill creates a professional board. It creates another board. We're going to add to the bureaucracy. You know, that on his face should tell you, you know,
this is bad.
Where this thing is headed.
In the wrong direction.
Yeah.
Again.
Create a professional board, the Environmental Review Board. One more step. To oversee the administration and operation of Act 250, which was defended as the heart of the bill. This ERB would hear appeals of jurisdictional opinions and district commission decisions instead of the environmental court, which notably is just a return to the board structure of 20 years ago. But
it doesn't get rid of any more red tape. It just displaces red tape.
Yeah. So yeah, create more bureaucracy. But here's the big the kicker, the second tenet. Changes in jurisdiction. Jurisdiction would no longer be determined by the size of a project, instead by location. This is done by establishing tiers of jurisdiction, with tier one areas possessing the most relaxed regulation and tier two areas representing a new Act 250 changes and tier three areas designed to protect critical natural resources. So the whole idea by creating these three tiers, tier one is the cities.
Right.
So if you've already built in a city, they're going to relax Act 250 so that you can build more apartment buildings. We can all live in this 50-minute city.
Well, the left loves high-density housing.
Yeah, exactly. But tier two and tier three, that's going to affect 90% of rural Vermont,
right, which is
where most of us live,
which is what most people in Vermont want to live.
And guess what?
Yeah.
This bill would make it more difficult to build anything,
right,
more anywhere outside of a city. And somehow that is supposed to help our housing crisis?
No, the left, you have to take back out. Dan Bongino calls it the 30,000 foot view. Back out and look at it. Ladies and gentlemen in our listening audience, most of you already know what a 15-minute city is. If you don't, go and do an internet search and look. They've been trying to push this all over Europe. This is what's going on. This is what this reform, ha ha ha, is about. It's about 15-minute cities, driving people out of rural areas, making it so hard to build anything in rural Vermont, that the only option, the cheapest option, is to move into, I don't know, a 12 by 12 apartment in one of the cities, already established cities.
Yeah, from what I've heard, 97% of Vermont would be more difficult to build.
Oh, that's reform?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So you and I, if we want to put up a tool shed, we're going to have an Act 250 review. But, you know, if you want to put up a
high-density housing in Burlington, you're good.
Well, that's better. That's going to be less administrative cost at that point. So, yeah, this is the less idea of reform and fixing our housing crisis, making it more difficult for you and I to, be able to build. Just crazy. Anyway.
To me, Reform Act 250, don't reform it. Repeal it. Start over.
Well, we all care about the environment.
Yes.
And it's, you know.
And there are ways we know how to deal with things. This, like you said, it's 50 years old. We know how to deal with environmental issues. We don't need that.
Yeah. So we need to, and we do care about those same things. But if we're going to be serious about correcting the affordability of housing in Vermont, we're going to have to do something about streamlining this administrative services. So anyway, I think that's going to wrap it up for this week.
We're done already?
We are. Oh. But as a reminder, folks, stay safe, stay informed, listen to Right Side Up.